This is the Great Destinations Radio Show. GreatDestinationsRadioShow.com.
We are Lloyd and Yaya. I'm Yaya.
He's Lloyd. He's Lloyd.
And we run a blog called Hand Luggage Only. And our blog is essentially about travel. There's a lot of food in there as well, and some photography, which I think those are the two come hand in hand with travel as well, really.
So how do you describe yourselves then? When people ask you, it's, I don't know, immigration, what you do, are you journalists, are you bloggers, are you travel reporters? How would you term yourselves?
That's a really good question, because even I still don't know what to say when I get to the... It always ends up being a surprise when I'm in the queue, and I'm like, what do I need to say?
Yeah, I think it's right. I don't know, right, like a blogger, maybe?
A lot of people don't understand what a blogger is when you write it. If I'm honest with you, like it can sometimes be a question that arises, like, what actually is that job? Like, people still don't really see it too much as a job. They see it as more a hobby.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, we would write blogger, and I think it's always easier when you have to write it down, but when someone asks you in person, like, so what is your job? And then you say it, then you almost have this whole extra period of explaining what it is and how it even makes sense that could even be a job and things like that, really.
And I've spoken to people before who've been concerned about writing down journalists because of the regime they might be going into in case they get detained or
that's
something.
That's true.
I don't think we ever put down journalists.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever... I don't know why. Yeah, we never put down journalists, really. Maybe writer at a stretch, but, like, yeah. Typically just blogger is what we would put down.
When did you two decide to start recording your travel experiences then? Was it a case of you thinking, right, we're going to do a blog and we're going to start doing it now? Or was it a holiday that kind of turned into a couple of pictures online that then turned into a blog?
Do you want to answer?
Yeah. So for us, we'd already been... I think one of the biggest things that started it was the fact that we got a really good camera. And then we've just been taking, like, I think we got a bit passionate about taking photos when we travel. So the travel already existed. Like, we always used to travel long before we started the blog. And I ended up building, like, having a lot of photos. And Lloyd does a lot of the research as well, like, when we travel as well. So you found out, like, I don't know, after about 5 years, we had all these photos, like, all this information about places. And thought it would be nice to put them somewhere and share them.
I think that's the whole reason why, you know, most people, including us, actually go out and photograph something, is because you do want to share it. And I think sometimes when you get home and you have like 50,000 photos of like 30 destinations, you're like, what am I supposed to do with all this?
Yeah.
I can't just make a photo book and put it on my coffee table. So I wanted to do so much more than that. I want to share and see what other people think of things. So it was very organic for us.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, we'd been doing it like naturally on Facebook already. Like the way you get back home from a holiday and you upload it for your friends and family to see. And we'd been doing that for ages. And I think it felt a bit... Like, after a while, I felt like there could be so much more than just, say, just sharing it within that closed space as well. And so they decided to create a blog to share that. And, yeah, it kind of grew from there.
Really. Yeah.
So do you guys have to have the pictures for you to do the report? I mean that if you went somewhere and you had a really great time, but for whatever reason, whether it's weather or something, the pictures don't look so good or there's nothing to really photograph, would you not write about it?
Oh, no, I think we would still use the
We kind of embrace it if we're honest with you there. I can remember one experience in particular where we arrived in Palermo and it rained for the whole time. It literally did not stop raining, which is terrible when you're trying to go outside with a foggy DSLR.
And it's Italy as well, so it's not like you're in Wales where people Scotland where people expect rain. Like, it's Italy, so people expecting sunshine and gelato and things like that. But I think for us, we just embrace it because at the end of the day, I think I'd still much rather see a photo from a rainy day than read just text. I think that whole thing about photos being worth 1,000 words still kind of counts a lot when it comes to travel, because there's no point describing how beautiful, I don't know, Mount Fuji is to me when I can just see a photo, no matter how bad, even if it's a camera phone photo on a blurry day that's foggy and everything, like that would still kind of sell it a bit more than just text on its own. I think a mix of text and photos works that way.
And I think equally, like what you were saying about adding photos that maybe we didn't take that were maybe kind of like stock photos, we would probably try not to do that when we were at a destination, just because we try and keep it quite real or authentic. I mean, rain, just for instance, to use that the Palermo example, is a very common part of anybody's holiday. We all dread it, but it does happen. And I think we try and embrace that in so many ways, because otherwise it doesn't come across as being authentic. And that's one of the most important things for us.
Have you brushed up your skills in photography or perhaps in writing? And have you actually gone on courses or bought books to hone your abilities?
I think we're writing not so much. I think mostly because we're writing, I think we try to do it the way we would speak to friends. Yeah. In which case, if you try and brush that up far too much, then you end up sounding not quite as natural as you would. So we try to embrace the naturalness of like, right, if I was describing this to, I don't know, my brother or to like my friend or my sister or whatever, like I would describe it this way, I would sound this way. Photography, on the other hand, that one we have tried, but we haven't gone on any courses, but I think it's
been trial and error, hasn't it, in a lot of ways, over maybe 10 years now, that we've just literally learned what to do. And I mean, you sometimes when you go to destinations, you realize you have to brush up on your skills very quickly. So things like when we were going to Iceland and we were shooting the Northern Lights, you couldn't just go there with your iPhone and try your best to take it, a great photo of it. It was just not going to happen. So I think for us, it was all about the
learning on
the kind of like meeting the demand of where we were going. And then, the internet's perfect for that kind of stuff. The information's there, everything's free. And it's all trial and error and just finding out what works for you best. Yeah. To photo.
And I think also there are a lot of photography communities. And when I say this, it's not anything special. I literally mean like Instagram or VSCO or VSCO, it's called, where people upload their own photos as well. And I think it helps kind of show like there's a different style to editing photos than what you would normally think of. So make every photo bright and colorful isn't necessarily going to work in every situation. And I think being able to kind of surround yourself with things like that shows like actually, you know, they're just much more varied ways you can play around with photos and things like that. So we try to do that, and I think while we're still like far from perfect, I think it's definitely, we can see the difference from 10 years ago to now, and hopefully we'll just keep on improving that way, really.
So does taking photos take quite a bit of your time when you're actually out on location? You don't, I guess, point and click.
I'd say, to be honest with you, like it doesn't take a lot of time, but we always have our camera with us.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the better way for us to phrase it. It kind of comes hand in hand, and it's very normal for us just to be carrying our camera. Because if we see anything, we can just snap it. It's not necessarily that we spend a lot of time taking all of our photos, unless it's like the Northern Lights where you have to take a lot of time.
Yeah.
But on the whole, it's very spontaneous, very much like seeing an opportunity that we like and kind of very real in that way.
Yeah. I think especially for travel, I think it's never, it doesn't feel like two different experiences. Like it feels like you're just seeing what you're seeing, you're doing what you're doing. If you feel like you stop and you take a photo, but it's never like, okay, right, I'm going on this photo shoot. And then once I'm done with taking the photos, I can then enjoy the place or something. It's never really quite like that. But we take a lot of photos, but only as the result of what we're doing. And I think what you'll find sometimes is if we do a lot of things, like say we had a lot of activities planned for the day, we end up with a lot of photos just naturally. And if we don't, if we've just been having a relaxed day, then you end up with barely any photos. So that whole thing just kind of just goes hand in hand with whatever kind of travel experience we're having, really.
So have you changed your approach to the blog, your style over the years from what you've learned?
Style.
I don't like.
It's a good question.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think.
I don't think we have actually. I think with the blog, one of the biggest things before. So another thing as well that before we started blogging, we'd already been reading blogs generally, and I think with that, you almost had a sense like this is the kind of blog you wanted to be, and this is the kind of blog you didn't want to be as well. And so we've kind of tried to hold on to it, particularly to the same style, particularly because that's kind of what got us popular in the first place. So people were responding positively to the way we kind of just had this relaxed attitude, say, to travel. Like, we're not interested in telling you the history about a place or, you know what I mean? Like, oh, there's a lot more useful sites for that, like Wikipedia, where you can do that. It was just about sharing, like, inspiration about the place, maybe a few tidbits here and there. But that whole relaxed style has still stayed the same. And we think it's important to stay the same as well, because that's what made us different and kind of made people want to read our blog as well. So we try to keep it the same way, really.
Is there one topic or even a type of photograph that you found really does fly?
I would say photograph, probably something quite, either something quite different or something very normal in a lot of ways. So not normal.
I think landscape photography, like just the photos of nature, tend to do quite well, and especially like dramatic pieces, like pieces of nature, like I don't know, huge mountains that you wouldn't believe, or unbelievably,
Iceland, yeah.
I think all the dramatic kind of natural photos tend to be a sure bit.
But then also finding kind of different perspectives of like very
simple
popular sites,
yeah.
So like Brooklyn Bridge in New York, when you can take some really good shots from Williamsburg in Brooklyn, overlooking Manhattan, things like that. Just finding them unique perspectives sometimes help to show people different sides of a kind of a familiar destination.
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. I think if you can find an interesting perspective, and some of it is as simple as just going down on your knees to take a photo, or kind of framing it with like something else in the in the background and stuff, I think those kind of things also work quite well. But a sure, like, sure bet is, say, I don't know, if you went to Japan and you're again going back to Mount Fuji and you took a photo of Mount Fuji, I think that kind of dramatic landscape, people tend to respond quite positively to that as well.
Have you found a way to get more follows and more engagements on Facebook? Because you have a massive number, over 50,000 people following you on Facebook, and that doesn't happen overnight. But for some people, they just click a magic formula. They just get it right. Have you found that, or has it been a long, hard slog?
I mean, we've been doing this for over 2 years, so it has taken time to get to that point as well, but I think a lot of it happened almost quite naturally. So like people initially at the start, I don't even think we really bothered about Facebook or prioritized it as much. And I think over time we decided to kind of put a little pop-up on the side to say, right, we have a Facebook page, by the way. And I think people then kind of naturally clicked through to that. Also, I think Facebook is quite, a lot of people use Facebook naturally, so it's quite a great way to stay.
It's quite a shareable platform. And I think on the fact that it's a shareable platform alongside travel being something that most people are very intrigued by, it's kind of helped us in a lot of ways to kind of capture an audience, but get people to see what we're doing, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think what we found, I think, with Facebook, a lot of the followers we have actually come directly from our website. So they've clicked, so when the thing pops up, like, oh, by the way, have you seen our page? Or we have a Facebook page, and people come through that way. And then what we've tried to do from time to time is things that aren't on the blog, we sometimes put them on Facebook, or Facebook will see, you'll see it on Facebook first before you see it on the blog. And that way there's almost like a value to being on Facebook. It's not just like you go on Facebook and you see exactly what you do on every other platform. So Facebook almost has to, almost like have something, some reason why you should be following this one instead of Twitter, or instead of, I don't know, Instagram or whatever else, really.
So you have a concerted strategy, really, for social media?
I think you have to a little bit, just because you'll have different audiences on different platforms. I mean, the platform that uses Twitter will be very different from the platform that uses Snapchat. And I think we just try and provide value in whatever we're doing. So,
yeah. I think each of these platforms are also different. Like, you wouldn't, like, Pinterest is an entirely different thing to Facebook or to Instagram or Twitter. Then I think what we try and do is almost look at each platform in isolation, like as compared to just trying to make everything kind of work the same way. It's not just like one rule fits all type thing, but yeah.
Well, it's a lot of work this, isn't it? I mean, how much time do you spend just managing the blog, the various social media forms? I don't mean time actually writing things, but just making sure everything is fine-tuned and honed.
It's a long day, if I'm honest. Some days we could be doing 20 hours of admin work. it's very much about, you know, kind of like planning our what we're going to be doing when we're away as well, you know, updating different things on the site, obviously responding to emails and things.
To comment,
and yeah, it just, it can take a lot of time, and sometimes you can get to the end of the day and realize you've not,
don't feel like you've done much.
Yeah, you don't feel productive, but in lots of ways you are. You just don't see the results straight away.
Yeah, and I think with a lot of these platforms as well, there's so much more that we could be doing. Like, there's so many more things that are exciting stuff that we're like, oh, what about this idea and stuff? But it's just, there's not enough time. So you almost have to focus on the things that you can actually do that you feel are important. And then everything else, hopefully on a day where you have a bit more time, then you can do that. But yeah, we spend hours a day doing it, especially because of your social media as well. Particularly, that is almost real time a lot of the time for us. So you can't really just switch off unless you're doing nothing and you're at home.
Yeah,
then
well, even my dad tells me off at home for having my phone at the table at dinner time. So,
I mean, you've just come back from Mexico, so how much time when you're out there was spent just sitting on your laptop or whatever device doing stuff like that rather than soaking up Mexico?
Oh, so we try to make a lot of effort with that one as well. So I think with Mexico, for instance, like there was one day where we were like, right, we need to catch up with a lot of emails and things like that. And then once it was caught up with on that one day, and that one day, I think we spent maybe 5-6 hours.
5 or 6 hours, yeah. We woke up really early.
That's the thing. So we woke up before anybody else at the hotel had woken up. We woke up around 6-ish and then did like a lot of the stuff. So by noon, we were done. And then you could actually go on and enjoy the sun and other things as well. But we also had, I think we had like several days where it was just like, okay, right, we can spend 1 or 2 hours doing this, but we cannot spend all day.
Like, yeah, we kind of set ourselves a kind of a goal, I suppose, that we had to be done by a certain time because we have to enjoy a destination, we have to experience it. It's something that we enjoy and we feel passionate about. So, I mean, there are days when you think, I could be doing emails all day or comments all day or
write a blog
post. Yeah, I mean, but sometimes you just need to kind of let go of that a little bit and then realize the bigger picture.
Yeah, and over time as well, we've had more help because we've got an agent now. So for us, like the admin, we've been able to move a lot of the admin stuff over to the agent in terms of dealing with like emails and queries about like potential like trips we could be taking and things like that. So having the agent then helps take the pressure off. Otherwise, like Lloyd was saying, you could spend 12 hours a day consistently, all day, every day, just replying to emails.
So, tell me about the agent, because this is something that I haven't heard of before. It sounds very Hollywood. So do your people talk to our people? Is that how it works? Why did you get an agent? Why did you feel the need? And what does the agent do? What do they take off your workload?
Yeah, so I think for us, like with the agents, like the biggest thing for them is like they already... So our agent used to work as a digital, like it was head of digital, one of the advertising companies. So he came in with a wealth of knowledge about the digital kind of market and how things were changing. But for them, from their point of view, like they understand the fact that advertising, kind of reaching an audience generally, is bigger than just say, oh, put a banner somewhere or just put adverts somewhere. It's more about having people kind of be able to experience things and share real life reasons why you should actually be able to do something or not do something. And so it's almost like going with an honest approach to advertising as compared to just saying like everything is amazing, it's awesome. But from our point of view, where it helps us is that like a lot of the times they're getting like say emails and like conversations were happening about places we could be visiting, and people, you start to get invited to destinations by different brands or tourism boards and things like that. And these conversations can span hours sometimes. And
yeah, I mean, there can be like 60 emails easily in the chain.
Yeah. And if you have several of those that you're dealing with all the time, like you can just spend all your time doing that and doing nothing else, which is a bit of a shame because that's not really what the blog is about. Like it's about travel and it's about photography and going out there and experiencing these things and writing about these things. And so time spent doing admin kind of takes away from the time you could be doing things that people actually can want to blog to read. So for us, it was just nice to be able to hand that over to somebody that was A, knowledgeable about it, but B, could actually deal with all the stuff that we didn't, like we would have just been spending far too much time doing, really.
So does your agent work for you then full time?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, no, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, so they've got other bloggers as well, so it's not just one agent that just works for one person as well. So they've got other bloggers as well that they work with. And, yeah, they work for all of us as a whole, like, I guess full-time, really. That's their job, like, that's what they do.
What's been the biggest success so far with your blog, do you think?
Ooh, the biggest success. It's hard to kind of define success in a lot of ways.
Well, let's say in the terms of if you look back on a week and you go down to, say, your local pub back in yeah. Britain on the Friday night and think, yeah, great week. You're really happy with what you've achieved. There must be some milestone moment where you've really been euphoric because of what's happened.
I think it's one of two things. I think we try not to focus as much on numbers, but I think it would be kind of a bit silly to pretend like they don't matter as well. And I think the growth that we've seen of the days where you kind of see, like, oh my gosh, traffic has, I don't know, doubled or tripled, and then you look back after about a month and you're like, oh my god, it still stayed at that same rate. Like, obviously, like, that wasn't just a one-off. Like, it's actually just grown and then grown and grown. I think the increase in numbers has been a big one, but I think bigger than that, I think one of the biggest things is when you get emails from people that actually say, oh my god, I did what you said and it was amazing. Or like, we got an email, I remember this one particularly, but from, it was a lady who was in her 70s. My husband had just passed away, and she had said she had been reading our blog for ages, and I mean, we didn't know this, but said she had been reading this, and she decided she was going to do, like, a round the world tour on the basis of what we'd been talking about and what we'd recommended. And she wrote to say, oh, she just finished doing that and it was amazing and thank you so much. And I think it's just that almost brings it right back to that whole personal connection that you're having with somebody, like, far away, somewhere else in the world as well, that you've never actually physically met. And I think that bit actually does really feel quite good, because I know how, like, as much as I enjoy, I don't know, reading, like, news stories online or whatever, I wouldn't necessarily always write to them to say thank you or anything like that. So it's for someone to take the effort to actually do that as well, and to even hear her story as well, I think that kind of stuff does make you feel really special. And then, yeah, it just feels really good.
It does, definitely.
So, I mean, your recommendation clearly is something that influences people. With that, of course, I guess comes a bit of responsibility. What's happened when, if it's ever happened, you've been somewhere, perhaps the guest of some agency or body or tourist board, and it's not actually been really good. It's been perhaps not a bad experience, and you're thinking, I don't know if I can say anything good about this. How do you tackle that?
I think if something, we try to be quite honest about things, but we also try to be quite fair. We'd never be just like, oh my god, this was crappy and that's the end of that type thing. I think it's almost being constructive about it. So if there was something you didn't like, so we went somewhere in Bali, for instance, and it was meant to be like, you had a great view of like a mountain and you're meant to go there for
a volcano.
And then when we went there, it was, so the food was atrocious. Like, it was actually not that great. There were a few things that you could eat, but most of it was just a bit meh. It wasn't that great, but the view was amazing. And with something like that, we almost like caveated to say, you should definitely go to this place. However, when you go there, just know that you're going for the view, not the food. Like, the food is not, it's not that fantastic. It's not the reason why you want to go there, but you should definitely go there because this is one of the best spots where you can get this great view and things like that.
I think it's always important that we're honest, but not, we don't have to be disparaging to be honest.
Exactly.
And I think that's the kind of the biggest thing that we try and do.
Mm. And people understand it as well. Like, nowhere is perfect. Even when you go to, I don't know, if you went to a Michelin star restaurant for food, there's bound to be somebody in your group, if you went with a group of friends, that wouldn't like something that everybody else does. So there is perfection. There's also personal taste as well. So you can't really, like, people's taste might mean that they might not find something perfect that you might find perfect as well. So it's just best to be fair and just to say, right, this is what our experience was. However, it could just be that one day. It could be the one cook they had for the day or something. So it's best to caveat things and say, right, this is what I understand from my little bit of the experience there, really.
Out of all of the places you've been to, can you give us some highlights? You might have different highlights, of course, because you're different people, but are there any places that really stand out as locations you'd recommend people to go and visit?
Well, for me, it has to be the Faroe Islands. I've wanted to go there for so long.
That was Iceland for you.
It was Iceland. It was Iceland until I went to the Faroe Islands. For the longest time, it was. And then we were fortunate enough to go to the Faroe Islands about 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. And it was absolutely stunning. That it's so close to the UK. Like, it's a one-hour flight directly from... I mean, we flew from Edinburgh at that time. And the landscape is so dramatic. It actually looked that, in a very weird way, looks like you've just stepped into Jurassic Park. It's unreal.
It's Game of Thrones, Jurassic Park-esque type landscape.
Now, you said you always wanted to go there, and there's always a risk, isn't there, when there's somewhere that you wanted to go, that the reality may not meet expectation. Did it exceed expectation?
It exceeded expectations. To be honest with you, though, I can speak for myself definitely here. I think I've learned not to kind of weigh in too heavily on my expectations. So when I am thinking of going to a place, or I do know I want to go to a place, I try to go there still with open eyes about what I'm going to experience and see. Because sometimes I think the hardest thing with travel can be is if you go to, say, some destination like Ibiza, and you expect it to be the fjords of Norway, it's just not going to work. You do have to kind of hone in on what happens when you're there, and I think that's the most important thing.
Just staying with the Faroes for a second then.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, did you eat whale meat?
No, I did not eat whale meat.
Did you buy a chunky knit sweater?
Do you know what? I actually saw quite a few people walking around with those, and I desperately wanted one. And then I was like, oh, it's coming up to summer in the UK, so I thought it's probably best not to, because they have a ratio of like 2 to 1 for sheep to people there. And so they have lots of chunky sweaters available.
By the way, it's known for its sweaters as well.
Yeah.
And is there a must-do thing or must-see place in the Faroes?
Oh, the lake in the mountain.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I would say is rent a car. It's really easy to get across the islands and just discover all of the scenery. You can't really get lost there. What will happen is once you start going across all the islands, you'll see all these amazing sights, or the kind of the lakes that kind of almost fall over the cliffs. There are 100 meter high cliffs.
I was going to say that would be the one, to answer your question, the must do thing that I would definitely recommend would be that lake. I think I'm not quite sure how to.
It's about 10 minutes from the airport.
Yeah. Sogasvatn, maybe, or something. But it's like a one hour hike just to get the best view of it. But it just looks like it looks ridiculous, because it's just like this lake in this one set atop this huge mountain as well that falls into the sea, and it just doesn't make sense when you look at it. So when you see
so unreal
of it, so to actually see that in person, that is probably pretty special as well.
Any other highlights from your world travels?
So I was gonna say, with just kind of tying to what Lloyd was saying, Thailand was quite a big one for me. But I think with Thailand, it was managed around Phuket as well, and PP Islands, but it was something where I didn't have any expectations. Like, we used to live in Singapore, it was just a quick flight over to Thailand, and with that, it kind of just blew my mind away, really, because it was absolutely stunning. Like, the scenery, like, these sheer mountains just fall straight into the sea, and it was just so beautiful there. And I think that was something that I expected to be maybe a bit more like the idea people give you of Bangkok, where it's like, oh, it's crazy and it's fun and it's party central and stuff. So I wasn't quite sure. I didn't really create this huge expectation, but going there really, really made it was fantastic to see, really. But I think to tie into what Lloyd was saying, the whole thing with expectations, I think that's almost the best way to ruin travel for yourself. Because I think that's something I did, for instance, with Milan, where I just thought, oh my God, Milan is going to be the same as Paris or London or New York and be this ridiculously, like, I don't know, crazy city with lots of people kind of going everywhere and doing lots of stuff. And I think then you realize, like, oh, actually, no, it's its own city, has its own vibe, its own things to see and stuff. And this is very early when we used to travel. But I think that's when you realize very quickly that, yeah, just go to places and let them be what they are. Don't let them be what you want them to be.
Definitely.
In your head.
Get off the plane with open eyes.
And in terms of things you've learned that you'd pass on to people, I'm sure you get asked this at dinner parties or Christmas from friends and relatives all the time. So if I can ask perhaps each of you for some, well, you have travel hacks on your website, don't you? But tips and advice that you'd pass on to people, things you've learned perhaps the hard way.
I would say for me, it's about being flexible when you travel. Don't set too many parameters to have to do something at a certain time by a certain point in your life. I mean, kind of embrace the fact that travel is very fluid in lots of ways and that there's so many different experiences to have, and kind of jump on whatever experience is available. So for us, like, one of the biggest things that we do when we travel is we search for reasonably priced flights, if not the cheapest flights we can find, and go anywhere we can. We tend not to think too much about the destination until we're on that plane then and think, right, how are we going to explore this place? I think for me, that flexibility really helps me see so much more and see the world in a different way as well, without sounding too cheesy.
So you pick your travel, do you just look at cheap flights where you can get a cheap flight and just go and fly, or do you have a destination in mind first of all and just find the cheapest route to get there?
So I was going to say, so it's changed a bit now in the sense that we do a bit of both, but at the very start, what it was we just went online and then just looked for, well, what are the cheap flights going for this weekend? And at that point, we hadn't really traveled to too many places, so anywhere was as good as everywhere, really. So, like, you'd go on there and you might find, I don't know, £8 flights to Gothenburg, which we actually did, £8 return. And it's like, well, haven't been to Sweden before, haven't been to Gothenburg, might as well go there. And then, yeah, we tended to do that, like, on the weekends as well. So back when we first started traveling, we used to work, like, full-time. So you could always go in on a Friday and then come back by Sunday night or something. So it was quite a nice week to go in and make the most of your time without actually taking a holiday or booking holiday time off work, really.
So you're okay with Ryanair then?
Oh, very.
Very, very okay with Ryanair. In lots of ways, like, I actually genuinely like Ryanair, just because one of my biggest pet peeves is having to taxi on a plane and then wait for half an hour to get off. And I feel that Ryanair are very, very efficient with that. They can get you on and off so fast. And that's the biggest thing I want, is to be able to get out of the plane to explore the destination. So I actually value that quite a lot. And the fact that they've made travel very accessible to so many more people. I mean, we wouldn't have been having this conversation 20 years ago. And I think it's a very beautiful thing that so many people now can afford to travel, which maybe couldn't do so many years ago.
And I think, yeah, Ryanair pretty much does what it says on the tin. Like, if you show up and you show up with your luggage overweight and they've told you this already, not to do that, then yes, you might get a bad experience with that as well. But on the whole, they do what they say they're going to do. And that's pretty much what you're paying for, really. So, yeah, as long as you play within their parameters and their rules, which you would do with it, pretty much everything else in life as well. Like, as long as you play by the parameters, then you're mostly fine, I guess.
Any other good tips?
I don't know. Do you have any, Yaya?
I think one, which is kind of like a really basic thing sometimes, is just remember to kind of take a map with you. I mean, these days we have Google Maps, but when you're traveling, like, your internet might not be working, so you're kind of left stranded. And it sounds really basic and really silly, but I think the worst example I've had was when we were in Edinburgh for the first time, and literally, I think we're trying to get to Princess Street from where the hotel was, and it's a really short walk. It was like a 5-10 minute walk, and ended up spending almost 2 hours getting there because we thought we had to go through it. We didn't know how to get there, basically. I didn't look at a map or anything, and just kind of walked a little bit, then figured we were lost and asked somebody else for directions. I kept doing that all the way through, and that kind of silly mistake is just, when you have a weekend to spend time somewhere, it's like a limited period of time. You don't want to spend half of that time just lost and wondering where you are as well. So it sounds really, really silly, but I think that's just been the biggest thing. Like, you can download offline maps now of cities, and they're free as well, or wherever you're visiting, or even offline sat navs as well. So I think it's all about almost planning once you get to the destination to make sure you have all that information with you without needing to kind of access the internet, or even if it's a physical map, just have it with you, really.
And you are hand luggage only. Is that for real? Do you go everywhere with only hand luggage?
Well, not as much everywhere. We do try to. We need to put a little asterisk there, I think. Because there's sometimes when it's very hard to, say, for instance, going to Iceland, when you have to take all of your camera equipment with you. It's just impossible to be able to fit everything in because
So it's just the one thing you really need for Iceland is the tripod. That doesn't fit into any hand luggage at all. Unless that was the only hand luggage you took as well. But yeah.
We do try. We do definitely try. I mean, that's the whole reason how we started travel. And I mean, for bigger trips, no, we wouldn't do. Like, say we're going to Peru in a few months. I mean, we're not going to take hand luggage just to Peru. So we're very realistic in a lot of ways to know when that wouldn't work as well.
Yeah. And to be fair, the way that when we first started it, a lot of the trips that we took were just hand luggage. Like, we only took hand luggage only partly because, as well, with Ryanair, if you take more than hand luggage, you will get charged for it. but we just used to, like, say we used to go to, I don't know, Paris for the weekend or Amsterdam or places like that where you don't really need. I think the longest we've done a trip for with just hand luggage has been like a week, and you realize like you don't actually need all the extra stuff that you pack with you. But if, say, like when we went to the US for 3 weeks, I think it was almost a month that we were in the US on a road trip, you can't really just go with hand luggage, especially when you don't even have to. So it's always like we do what the trip requires of us, but we never try to be like, oh no, I said I'm only hand luggage only, and so I'm only going to do that.
You can buy a toothbrush and emergency socks anywhere, really, can't you?
You know what? That's exactly my thing, is that I have a list of about like 5 essentials that have to be there, like my contact lenses so I can actually see things and different things like this, really silly things. But once I have them in my bag, everything else can be replaced. I can buy, you know, socks or toothpaste or anything like that. It's not really too much of a problem then.
Yeah, I have like 3 things I make sure I have, like my clothes, my phone and my computer, and my toiletries. That's it, really. Like, as long as I have those things, and even toiletries, we're talking about just toothbrush, toothpaste, deodorant, like simple things like that. Like, it's never, once those things are in there, everything else is just surplus to requirements, really.
Finally, I should ask you, because you do travel so many long-haul places. You're going to Peru, you just come back from Mexico. Yeah. We've spoken about getting cheap flights. What do you do about getting reasonable seats, though? I mean, do you always go economy? And if you do, how do you make sure that you have a seat that's going to give you the most legroom or the best potential for getting sleep?
I mean, yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, for us, like, when we do travel long-haul, I mean, I'm 6'1", so I do like a little bit of extra leg room, but I'll always ask. I mean, I ask at the counter just to see if there are any seats available or not.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of, in lots of ways, I'm not keen on paying too much more for my seats once I've actually laid out a kind of a hefty sum. I would rather spend, you know, a few hours or so with 2 inches less at leg room.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair to, like, as well, like, I think we're never that bothered about things like that. So I think for us, especially, I mean, after you fly Ryanair for quite a while, you kind of realize, like, the seats, like, don't recline. Like, you don't even have anywhere to put your stuff in. So you kind of, we've never been too fussy, I think, about
travel. I think we're quite easy travelers in lots of ways. Like, we'll, as long as we have a seat and a seat belt, I'm happy.
Yeah. I mean, I've been on a long-haul flight where I've fallen asleep without reclining my seat, and I've fallen asleep for the entire journey like that, just sat straight up that way. So, yeah, we're not that fussy about, oh, I need to have extra leg room or this or that, as long as it's not a case where you can't actually even just put your legs down normally, which has never been the case, really.
No.
Unless it's that. But I think where possible, obviously, we'll try and make sure we get, like, the best seats and things like that. But
so I like a window seat, so I usually often do try and get a window seat.
Yeah.
Oops, sorry, it's just our dog barking, sorry.
Okay. Because a lot of airlines do actually charge you now for the seat choice.
They do indeed. Actually, most of them charge nowadays. I think the only one that doesn't maybe is Emirates, and that's one that we've flown on recently that doesn't charge and lets you pre-assign your seat straight away. But yeah, most of them do now. I think it's kind of like an added value feature that people add, don't they?
Well, it's a good tip, Emirates, isn't it, until they change it.
I know, right? I shouldn't have said anything, just in case.
Well, Yaya Lloyd, it's been lovely talking with you. We look forward to seeing your pictures of Peru when you come back from Peru, and Mexico perhaps soon.
Yeah, we're going to hopefully have our Mexico post up in the next few weeks. Peru's in September, but we've got quite a lot more trips planned this month. So we'll be kind of updating our blog every day. But yeah, thank you so much.
guys.
Oh, yeah, thanks, sorry. Just got back. They're just taking the dog out.
Nice to talk with you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Like that? Like us at facebook.com/greatdestinationsradioshow.